Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello, I'm Ellie Gibson.
And I'm Helen Thorne.
Who are you?
I'm Keith Stewart.
It's Keith Stewart!
Hooray!
Yes!
He's back, Ellie!
He's back, the best-selling novelist, former editor, games editor of The Guardian, and just all-round good human. Is that a fair description?
I think so, yeah. That's what my agent told me to say.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's £5, please. Yeah. We've had you on the podcast before, and you've come back.
I know, yeah. It must be for good behaviour. I don't know, or bad behaviour.
Yeah.
The fact that you use Ellie's house as a hotel.
Basically as a hotel, yeah.
Yes. Well, welcome, Keith. Welcome. So we're going to talk about lots of stuff tonight. We're going to talk about video games. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Fortnite.
Yes.
Because that's a big issue for parents at the moment. And, you know, it's trendy, isn't it, basically? That's what we're saying.
Yeah.
But we're also going to talk about your new book, Keith.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it came out today in hardback and ebook. And audiobook.
Oh my goodness.
You did that. Did you sit and read all your own words in a little room over many days?
No, we have actors to do it.
Oh!
But I got to...
You didn't do the voice of like the 15-year-old girl.
Hello!
I had a helium balloon. I had to have a lot of helium. It sounds really weird.
Yeah.
But before we get into the new book and all that, what have you been up to since we last had you on the podcast? Quite a lot, Keith.
Yeah, well, I stepped down because I was Guardian's games editor. Stepped down from that because, yeah, it was too much to do. So I still write for The Guardian. But, yeah, I've written this whole book. That was quite difficult and time-consuming. So, it's taken me 18 months to write book three.
Book three you've done?
No, sorry. What am I on now? Book
two. He's so tired.
Oh my gosh. Keith, I hate to break it to you. You've only done two books.
No, I haven't actually, because I did a book on the Sega Mega Drive.
Oh, okay. So, that's the same as a best-selling novel.
That's my opus. Yes.
Oh, God.
No, I actually did a book before that. I did a book. When I was really desperate for money when I was a freelancer, I was offered the chance to write a book on Spanish and Portuguese folk costume.
Oh!
For like £200.
Why? Have you got a specialisation?
No, I knew nothing about it. But...
And they went, I know, Keith Stewart's the man.
Yes.
He's creative.
Who often dresses as a matador?
Well, you could have passed the work on to us. That's all I'm saying.
So, yeah,
well,
next time.
You could have paid
time.
It forward. Yes. And what have we been up to, Keith?
Yes.
Thanks for asking.
We've been just touring everywhere. Our book is still in print. We have written no more books. And, Ellie, guess what we've got?
What, Helen?
We've got brand new cat suits.
Oh, yes, we have.
I'm very excited. If anyone's been to our new show, you will have seen us looking very shiny, not only in gold cat suits, Ellie, but also...
Let's just say they are modelled on a part of the human anatomy, these other cat suits.
They may have a fur trim. let's just say that.
We wanted to talk about them because it's festival season, obviously, that we're coming into. And State of Disarray, who made our suits, make amazing festival wear. Not all of which looks like a woman's front bottom. Like, there are some...
I know, I'm looking at their brochure now. It's all, like, wonderful colours. There's, like, little leotards. There's full cat suits. Very jazzy jackets, I must say.
Great fish hat.
There's an amazing fish hat. Awesome sort of like kind of zippy jackets, everything you'd ever want in festival gear. So go and see them. They're at www.
Nice. Otherwise people will never get there if you don't put in the www. People never work it out.
I like the detail.
You've not done the http
colon.
Yes. First switch on your computer, then open Internet Explorer.
Netscape Navigator.
Oh, yes. Anyway, it's stateofdisarray.co.uk and also on the social medias, or SoMe, as I was told the other day.
Oh, is that what people are calling it now?
Yeah, like SoMe.
God, I hate people.
I know, right? It's at State of Disarray on your Facebook, your Instagram, and your Pinterest. Put it on your Pinterest.
If it's 2010, go for it. Why not go for it?
Anyway, so a massive thank you to State of Disarray,
yes,
who made us custom-built catsuit. So one morning, where was it, Ellie? Can you paint the scene?
I believe we were in a Travelodge in Cambridge, in my room, which overlooked a Nando's.
And a car park.
It's a dream scenario.
Yes. I'd spent a very melancholy morning looking out of the rainy window, sipping my unpleasant tea with UHT milk, watching them load in the marinades to Nando's. It was a very moving scene. It was like something from the wasteland. And then you popped in.
Yeah.
And then we had to take our clothes off down to our undies, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right.
And we had to measure each other.
26 different...
I've seen this movie.
And then it ends with us just eating chicken.
And then the plumber comes in.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Oh, it was dreamy time. So we took all these measurements and then we sent them off to the captain at State of Disarray, and back came all these catsuits. And we've even got like detachable hoods. We've got capes.
Yes. Oh,
it's very glam rock, I must say.
Yes. They are brilliant.
You could do a brilliant party game with your front bottom suits. Pin the
I think you'll find their twat suits. Given their proper name.
Exactly.
You could do like pin on the clitoris.
Why the clitoris? G-spot.
Don't tell me you haven't played that game before, Keith.
G-spot the difference.
Yeah. Blind man's muff. Come on.
Oh, there we go. Right. Oh, well, that's catsuit. Yes,
like we've set the tone exactly right.
Oh, well, you don't even know what's coming up with my game. I mean, that brings all our loves together, so that would be good.
So that's it. So let's get back to you, Keith. Go on, then, seeing as you're here. Now, your first book, A Boy Made of Blocks, which you talked about first time, that was a huge hit. Did you actually meet Richard and Judy?
I did, right? So you've got into the Richard and Judy book club, and part of that was to go to, we went to an event and met Richard and Judy, and they interviewed me about the book.
Oh my god, I would genuinely rather go to Richard and Judy's party than like the Queen's Garden party. I know you wouldn't, Thorn, but oh my god, I'd
No. I would walk over hot coals to get between Richard and Judy. Like, I mean, I want to nuzzle in both their bosoms.
Well, I did, but as I was being removed from the building, this is where I met met Jilly Cooper. I had my photo taken with Jilly Cooper.
Oh, how's she?
Lovely.
Okay.
She was reasonably tipsy, I think. But so was I. So I and it was Morag, my wife, was there as well, and she slipped a copy of my book into Jilly Cooper's handbag.
Morag.
She's sly, that Morag.
So that was good. But now, what I remember was that Richard is exactly in real life as he is on television.
Yes.
And he told me, because I told him I was on the way to Malvern to stay with my wife's parents, and he was giving me amazing facts about the Malverns. He said, Keith, do you know, if you go up and stand on the Malverns, there's no higher elevation until you get to the Russian steps. And it was thanks so much.
I love him.
I know he was just fantastic.
Why isn't he king or president or something? Like, he just represents everything that is good about this country.
Yeah.
He really does. But okay, so you got sort of Richard and Judy fame, but then Boy Made of Blocks, it went global. Like, I remember we visited your house and you just had like piles of your book in different languages.
He wrote them all out himself.
Yeah.
Google Translate.
It came out in the end in, I think it's 25 different countries.
Wow.
And yeah, the interesting thing is that, I get sent 5 copies from each country. So once in a while, I'll get 5 copies in Chinese, and I've just had the Danish ones in. It was amazing. I mean, in some countries they've sold quite well, in some countries they haven't. And like people now, some of the countries are coming back to buy the next book. And I keep getting these emails from them saying, "Well, Boy Made of Blocks didn't do that well. But we've got a lot of faith in you." So I've been getting these emails from each country, and it's like the worst Eurovision Song Contest.
Nil point.
Yeah.
Wow. But it's like getting an email from someone you've slept with going, "Look, let's just give it another go."
Yeah, exactly.
I had a really nice time.
Yeah. Well, it's good one of us did.
I had five photos of the night.
And is it being made into a film, A Boy Made of Blocks? Is that the thing?
So it's been optioned. Oh. Well, what that means is someone will try to make it into a movie and then it probably won't, but it might not happen. So, but it has been optioned by a company. So they're looking into it now.
So now you're a world famous multi-billionaire novelist. Mm-hmm. Are you still writing about games as well, though?
Yeah, so I'm still writing. So I dropped out of The Guardian as games editor, but I sort of snuck back in as games correspondent. So I'm working, Keza McDonald is the new games editor, and I'm kind of working with her.
Close personal friend. Not saying she's better at the job, Keith. I'm just saying.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
She's a woman, so that's
good. So it goes without saying that she is.
I mean... Not my words.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. As soon as...
she doesn't make the rules.
Just live by them. But it's quite funny because as soon as I left, they took video games. The Guardian decided to take video games out of technology and put them in culture. So Kez is very pleased because they gave her a desk next to the folk music editor. So
the folk music editor of The Guardian.
Yeah. Music and video games together at last.
Yeah. It's the natural fit, really, isn't it?
What I love is as well, because I read The Guardian a lot and there's all these messages saying, oh God, please give us money. Like, £2 could feed a starving Guardian writer hummus for a day. Like, things like this. They've still got a folk music editor. Like, that, he'll be the last to go. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but those vegan slippers that he wears don't pay for themselves.
I think he's taking backhanders from Clannad, whoever the fuck, I don't know who does folk music, really. Now, while we're talking about games, we did want to talk about a specific game, because I've been asked quite a lot about this, Keith, and I know you've written about it for The Guardian. We're talking about, of course, Fortnite, because I think a lot of parents... Kids are into Fortnite, but a lot of parents don't really know what it is, as evidenced by Helen Thorne's spelling it in the running order, Fortnite, like the word Fortnite.
What an idiot.
What a massive prick.
What? How else do you spell it?
Fort, N-I-T-E. Because it's cool. It's like the kids.
Yeah.
I wish you could see Ellie Gibson doing some kind of like hip-hop arms at me, like it makes it okay.
You wouldn't call a game like Fortnite of a normal spelling.
I'm so confused.
That's like calling it month.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, Tuesday. Come on, you've got to make
it
cool.
Foreign.
It's like Northern nightclubs that always spell N-I-T-E, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly.
Or Northern hairdressers are always called cuts with a K-T-Z.
So you've written about it for The Guardian. I've written a parent's guide about it for Sony PlayStation. But basically, for anyone who doesn't know, what is a Fortnite?
A Fortnite, Ellie, it's a computerised video game. It's a multiplayer online game. And basically, 100 players are parachuted onto an island and they have to find weapons and... fight, and it's the last person that survives out of these 100 is the winner, and that is the game. So it's like
really jolly.
Well,
it's jollier than it sounds.
Yeah,
oh, really?
Yeah. So it's very kind of cartoon. The graphics are very cartoony, and it's very silly.
Mm.
So it's very sort of slapstick violence, isn't it? Really, it's not like Call of Duty. There's not blood and viscera.
Is it like Doom meets Gilligan's Island or something?
Yeah, a little bit like that. Right, yeah, that's good. Exactly it. Except there's no warm messaging at the end about family and togetherness.
And then you are the winner because you are alive.
Yes, yeah, that's okay. It. Yeah. So yeah, it's just like life, really.
Oh. And it's a 12 plus. Is that right?
It is. Yes, 12. Yeah, I think so.
Now, it's 12 plus. Do you think? I mean, do your kids play it, Keith?
Yes, they do, my 10-year-old and my 12-year-old player.
Not here to judge.
No, but I mean, that's my question, really, because, again, that's something I got asked a lot, because, we always... The official line is age ratings are really strict, and I would never let a 6-year-old play an 18-rated game. But with this game, because I guess the thing is, it is... Like, let's be honest, it has got guns and shooting and explosions in it, and people die in it, but there's no blood or gore.
No.
Or sort of swears.
No.
Do you think 10 is an all right age, then?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think... As a parent, basically any online multiplayer game is instantly rated 12 plus anyway, because anything that gives you the ability to talk to other people, obviously there's a possibility of of hearing language or conversations that probably aren't suitable for a child. But as a parent, you don't have to have the voice comms on, so you could have a child playing it without that. But I think
you just go into like parental controls on the PlayStation. If you press the PlayStation button on the controller, that brings up like the dashboard, doesn't it? And you go into settings, parental controls. I mean, if you can do Facebook, you can do this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. And also there's a really good site, www.askaboutgames.com, which is run by the Video Standards Council, who do all the video games that age ratings in Britain, and they tell you how to use parental controls on all the consoles and on your phone, on your PC, and you can just go through that and set it up. It's really, really easy to manage games to make sure they're suitable for your kids, I think.
Yeah, I think because that's the biggest kind of fear. Like, I had Matilda, my 9-year-old daughter, was invited to a Fortnite party, mm-hmm. and the mum was like, oh, I just want to check you're okay with it. And I was like, well, no, because I don't know enough about the game.
What did they do? Did all the kids kill each other until there was one left?
Well, she said she had 5 screens and they're all playing Fortnite together. And I wasn't so keen on that because I said, oh, Matilda's, she's not really into video games and she's never played anything kind of shooty. And I didn't think, but then I was like, oh, am I being an arsehole? Like, it's hard to...
I don't think you are being an arsehole. Yeah. I think...
not that time, anyway.
Yeah, that time. I mean there were so many other occasions when you are. But I think this was just one of those really rare ones.
A bronze
ones.
Medal rather than a gold medal.
No,
asshole.
I don't think so. Because I think, you know, I think when you grew up playing video games like me, you just take it for granted that it's okay to play at shooting.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Mm.
I think what's difficult, but I think what's good is that you've thought about it. I think one of the problems that I find really disconcerting, and I was complaining about being asked to be on a BBC radio programme last week when all they wanted to talk about was how this was a very destructive and dangerous thing. Mm. I think it's really weird how the press, whenever kids are enthusiastic about something, there's basically two stories that the tabloids do it. What is this crazy new thing your kids are into? And then after that, it's why this crazy new thing your kids are into will kill them. And that, you know, there's no other way of thinking about it.
Mm.
And I don't know, like, I find that very frustrating because actually Fortnite, it's really social. My sons play it with their friends and they have a laugh and it's quite imaginative because there's the building component as well. So you're not just shooting. You've got to, like, build forts in order to sort of protect yourself and defend them.
Ah, forts.
Yeah, see?
Hey,
there's
the ticket.
So it's quite creative. And my sons often talk about it and they talk about their plans of what they're going to do and what
they're
going to try.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, you know...
it's keeping you off the drugs. I mean,
exactly.
That's great.
If anything can keep them off crystal meth, I'm all for
ding
it.
Ding dong. Yeah.
But I think as well, that, you know, the big cliche about, you know, teenage boys playing alone in their bedrooms, which I don't, even if they do that, like, video games are social now, so they're putting a headset on and they'll play with their friends, and like, they're not just talking about the game, they're talking about their lives and what they're doing, and it's a social thing. So I think
they're reaching out, Keith, that's what you're saying. They're reaching out.
Well, a lot of the time men need a distraction to talk to each other in a, you know, human way.
That's why football was invented.
Exactly. Video games in that respect are just like football. It's a place that they feel comfortable and they can, you know, open up.
So it's not the devil. They're not going to go and shoot people on an island all of a sudden.
No, exactly. Yeah. You can take them to the Isle of Wight and it's going to be fine.
All right.
Keith and I have been playing video games for over 80 years collectively.
Yes.
And we've barely murdered anyone in real life. So
you can count the number of murders that me and Ellie have committed on two hands.
It's fine.
You've convinced the listener now. Yeah. Rest assured, everyone.
I think we've done it. I think we've nutshelled it. But if you do want to know more about, like, because in your our Guardian article, you want sorts of questions about, like, the money thing and, like, the, you know, stuff like that. So do go and look for Keith's article on Fortnite on the Guardian, and it's awesome.
But that's a good, I mean, I think I feel better generally about video games after what you've said, because I think because I know so little, and from what you are sort of bombarded with the media, it's like, video games are bad. And if
I think it's very human to fear what you don't really understand. And like, lots of people didn't grow up playing video games, so it's natural if you see your kids playing a video game you don't understand how it works, it's very natural to feel kind of confused by that and worried about it. And I think that's good, you know, it's good as a parent to be worried about your kids, but I think the next step for me isn't to ring the Daily Mail and complain. It's play the game with your child and talk about it with them. And I think that's, you know, that's the most positive thing you can do, and then make the decision for yourself from a position of having played it. And you know, your kids will love it when you play video games with them.
Yeah.
Because it's there, you like, you know, inviting you into their little world.
Oh, well, that's our games chat done, isn't it, Ellie?
I think so. Should we talk about Keith's new book?
Yes, I really want to find out because I haven't read it.
Because you can't be asked to read it.
Well,
I've read some of it and Ellie's read all of it. So
thank you, Ellie.
She's a better friend.
I'll just quickly summarise it for you. So basically, it's about a father and a daughter, and the daughter has like a heart condition, and what happens is they meet this talking dog, and the talking dog...
is dressed as a vagina.
Yeah.
And there's this Australian character called Kelly Bourne, who's incredibly annoying, and just she laughs like a pig on drugs. And it's brilliant.
It's not based on anyone that I've ever met.
Richard and Judy are going to love it. They love all those things.
Why didn't you put a talking dog in it? I'd have given it 5 stars.
It's easy. You know, you don't think about these things at the time. Then afterwards, when you finish it off, you think, I knew talking dog.
It was the missing
what
piece.
What was I thinking of?
Rather than me fictionalise it, why don't you nutshell your book for us, Keith? Come on, 70,000 words, give it to us in 12.
Right.
What is it actually called? I don't think we've actually said
the
title.
So it's called Days of Wonder.
Days of Wonder.
It's out now in hardback on audio and ebook. And yeah, it's a story of a father called Tom, and he's a theatre manager, and his daughter, Hannah, who's 15, and she has a serious heart condition.
Mm.
And it gets in the book very early on. Her heart condition worsens, and she's worried about what will happen to her father if she does pass away. So she tries to get him dating, and it's about
with hilarious results.
With hilarious consequences.
Don't be modest.
Yeah, and at the same time, the theatre that he runs a small local theatre, is threatened with closure from the council. So they have all these crises that come in on them, and it's how they cope with them. But it is the best way to describe it, kind of, it's a comedy about congenital heart disease.
so was Carry On Doctors.
Yeah, exactly.
In a nutshell,
it's Carry On Doctor for millennials.
Yeah, because your first book, A Boy Made of Blocks, was not autobiographical, but it was about a father and a son, and the son was on the autistic spectrum.
Yeah,
which of course is based on your life.
Yeah,
experience.
On my own experiences, definitely. So it was semi-autobiographical, definitely. So yeah. It's a boy and a son connecting through Minecraft, and the son's on the autism spectrum. So
why did you decide to then just write about shit you know nothing about?
Because I couldn't get away with writing another semi-autobiographical book. I'd exhausted everything interesting that ever happened to me.
Couldn't you have made it about a mum and a girl in the autistic spectrum who really likes Zelda? I mean, come on, use your imagination, you're a writer.
we wanted to do something similar because it had done so well. So you do find yourself, like me and my editor Edward, were in a pub going through the different things that could go wrong in a family and whether we could make a book out of it. So that was an interesting conversation.
That sounds jolly.
Yeah. I knew I wanted to do another story about family in crisis sort of thing, but I wanted it to be completely different. And it just so happened that Morag has a friend who had heart surgery as a baby, and then she had heart surgery again as a teenager. And I was talking to her about her experiences, and what I found really interesting was the fact that for her, she had this condition, and when she was a 14-year-old, she was told that if she didn't have surgery, she had a 60-40% chance of surviving. But she was a teenager, and all she really wanted to do was listen to music and, you know, snog boys and get into trouble. And I found it really interesting the way she talked about it, was that she talked about her life as a normal teenager, but also she had this kind of thing hanging over, this gigantic thing hanging over her.
Mm.
And I found, you know, that was really interesting. And so I thought that would be a really interesting story to tell.
Well, it turns out you were wrong.
Brilliant. Okay.
No, I've read the book, and it's amazing, and that's a topic I didn't know anything about and haven't really thought about, and I just thought you just deal with it so sensitively, but also hilariously.
I'm
not going to say I wasn't expecting that, because you are, I know you and you're funny, but there's so many laughs in this book, which is basically about death. It's amazing.
Mm. Well, that was it, because I really wanted to, because, you know, I've been through, my dad died 10 years ago, and it was it's the hardest, worst thing that can ever happen to you. But it was weird, like the process that I had, my dad died of cancer, and I, you know, the 2 days when we were with him, at the end, my family were all together, and we actually, you know, it sounds awful, and people won't understand it if they've not been through this situation, but we did, you know, we sat around and we talked, with my dad, and we were laughing, you know, as a family. And I think, like, in every tragic situation in your lives, there is, like, you've got to see the funny. You've got to see the funny in it. You've got to do that. That's how we cope with life, you know.
I don't know what that's like. I don't know that we've made an entire career out of the misery of parenthood and made it funny. But I think that's what people cling to. They want to see the light in the dark.
But
I liked that you wrote from both the father's perspective and the daughter's perspective.
Yeah.
Why did you choose to do both voices?
Because I didn't want to. I think Boy Made of Blocks is very much like the father's story.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that again. And I didn't want the whole thing to be told from his perspective, because I thought her story was really interesting. And the idea of how do you as a person cope with the knowledge that your life could be cut short. And I thought, because Hannah in the book, she's really, she's quite cynical and funny, and she deals with it in quite a grown up way. Mm. And I don't think I could have conveyed her character through her father's eyes. I don't think it would have been fair to that character, and it wouldn't have been as interesting.
No, because you're always so overprotective as a parent. Yeah. And you always think that you know what your child's going through, but you don't ever know the full picture, do you?
No, exactly. And when I was writing the book, as part of the research, I went to Great Ormond Street Hospital and I went to the cardiology department and I met and talked to and discussed with a cardiologist called Dr. Matthew Fenton, who was incredibly helpful when I was writing this book. And he told me a lot about the process of telling parents and their teenage children about their child's condition, because he's a paediatric cardiologist, so he deals with children. And that dynamic of he'd often have to work out relationships with the children, in that he would tell them things and then they would have to tell their parents, or sometimes you'd tell the parents first to prepare them. But he had to manage this kind of intricate relationship, not only between him and his patient, but also him and his patient and their parents.
Yeah.
And that interplay. And he said, like, often he found that the children wanted to protect their parents from the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that's really fascinating, you know. Mm. What must that be like to be a child who has this condition, but also this worry of not wanting to upset their parents? I couldn't have told that story if I was just telling it from the father's perspective. So, you know, all the way through, Hannah's worrying about how she's going to deal with what's happening, but also how she's going to tell her dad and how her dad's going to cope.
And I guess having that condition ages a child as well, you suddenly
That's it. Because I spoke to Jane Crook, who's a specialist nurse at Great Ormond Street Hospital, who deals a lot with the teenagers there. And she said that they often are, they're very kind of realistic about life. Mm. And they're very matter-of-fact about it.
Yeah.
And I think that was really important. But I also think that I was really worried when I started the book, because I did have this kind of worry that teenagers are just basically, like Kevin from, you know, Kev from the Harry Enfield's teenager, storming around and slamming doors and monosyllabic.
Mm.
And I met a lot of teenage girls when I was making this.
Like, it's so funny. That sentence always is good.
I know. Nothing, this does not sound good. But
more like, travelodge just off the one.
Did you see that? More like put a Facebook post up on Facebook saying to her friends. Keith, my husband's doing some research. Has anyone got any teenage daughters he can borrow? So I read this and thought, this is on one hand helpful, but on another hand, so not good. But I talked to them with their parents.
Yeah. Right?
So we met up. So I met a lot of teenagers with their parents, and I talked to them. And I was lucky, and I met a bunch of teenagers who are super intelligent and funny.
Mm.
And it really made me feel much more confident about writing the book about a teenager who's intelligent and resourceful and mature.
Yeah.
And wasn't just slamming doors. And
well, again, well done, because honestly I was like, oh my god, he's gonna like write from the perspective of a teenage girl. I can't even remember what it was like to be a teenage girl. Fucking hell, Keith, what are you doing?
I know. Well, that's what I was thinking every day for 18 months.
So glad I made this decision. Yeah. Thanks, Ed, and that time in the pub.
Yeah.
But then as I read it, I was like, bits of it, and I, you know, I don't have a heart condition, but bits of it just did remind me of myself, or of being that age and that gender and in that world, and being a bit like Hannah's, like me, a little bit nerdy and a little bit into nerdy stuff, and but she's sort of all right with that in herself. And I was like, oh, he has based the character on me.
Yes.
He's so, yeah, so flattered.
You put him in the loft and you read all your stupid
diaries. Yeah, should have, yeah, that's the big revelation now. I should have told you about before we got onto the podcast. But yeah, I've been through all
your
diaries.
You've returned the diaries now that you've made some money.
I just want to say, I wouldn't have snogged Terence at that party. But, you know.
Wow.
But that is, no, you do, because you want to get an authentic voice as well. Because as soon as people don't feel like it's real, I mean, we're talking about fiction, but you want people to be in that character and not going, oh, but that's not factually correct, or that's not what a teenage girl will say, and that kind of skewers it. But I think
you didn't fuck it up, Keith, is what
you're
saying.
Oh, thanks. Oh, thank God.
For the paperback.
You didn't fuck it up.
Not Scummy Mummies.
You didn't fuck it up, stamp of approval.
Congrats.
It's what we all hope for. It's that and the Pulitzer Prize. That's what every author wants.
I mean, something you do know about is Somerset.
Yes. Thanks.
Sorry, that was a bit past it.
From teenage girls to your home county.
Oh, see the segue. Yeah.
What
Why don't you set a book in Catford, Keith? You spend enough time here staying in my house.
So it's set in Somerset again.
Yeah, yeah. Because, yeah, I just think because I love it there. And
it's
like,
very nice.
Yeah, and I think because there's lots of eccentric characters in the book.
Not enough fried chicken shops.
Yeah, there isn't. No, there's no perfect chicken in Froome, that's for sure. It's really, like, Froome is very offbeat. I think the whole of Somerset's quite strange. It's quite an interesting combination of kind of local people. Oh my God. I hope
now you've really gone.
Yeah. and people have come in, like, Froome is like quite sort of trendy town.
It's gone a bit sheeshy.
I know, yeah. So it's the trendiest town in Britain, according to, I think, is it Good Housekeeping? I can't remember.
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, they've certainly got their finger on the pulse when it comes to trends.
I don't mean banter, just because it's not Catford.
I especially love the descriptions of the theatre, because Helen and I obviously tour our you know, hit comedy show.
You sell out.
Scummy Mummies, all over the country. Tickets from scummymummies.com. But, like, I was just reading your book and going, oh, God, yes, I've been in dozens of these theatres. I've been in that lighting box, and I've been in that room with all the shit and the box files, and, like, and I've met this guy who's just really into it.
Always
just
called Ted. Always called Ted.
Yeah, I was just like,
I know, that's what I love about, this is what I love about your book, and I love about touring, is that these regional theatres are absolute gems. And as an Australian, I'm not going to get sick of me going, oh, this is so quaint. But it's absolutely delightful. These, like, little Victorian theatres or Art Deco theatres that we go into. And there will be Doris on the door, who's been there 40 years and is still wearing her smart jacket.
Well, she actually died in 2012. No one could bear to move her.
Yeah. It's too impolite to move her. So what, just let us keep
would have wanted it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
Just put a little ice cream in
her. Just give her a little job. Yeah. And also, obviously, since the arts cuts, most, like, small theatres are now run by, like, volunteers anyway. Yeah. And you get this kind of real sort of sense of community around them. And, you know, in Days of Wonder, they have an amateur dramatics group who are attached to the theatre. And they all know each other. And they all come into this theatre with lots of different problems in their lives. But when they're together, they're actors. And,
oh, my God, it sounds like Dibley.
Yeah. That's pretty much what I tried to write.
Dibley with Death.
Yeah. That was the original title.
Oh,
that was the working
Dibley
title.
With Death.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yes.
The Ticker of Dibley.
Wow. That's where we've got a hit touring show.
What can I say, guys? Where does it come from? It's not in me, I channel it.
It's
like I lob and then she smashes.
Every time.
Smash it, darling.
Comedy.
Oh, yes.
Now, we're not going to give away the ending, obviously. Mm-hmm. But as Helen knows, I'm a very unemotional person. Mm. I don't get moved by things.
I've questioned for many years that she had tear ducts.
Yes. Let's just say I had something in my eye that day.
Keith
Stewart. Possibly pollen. Possibly.
Maybe a squirt of chilli from your kebab.
Maybe a shard of glass, the amount of water that was that. It was, I'm not just saying this because you are my friend, because frankly, I think of you more as an associate.
It's, yeah, or a paying guest. Well, not a paying guest.
Not a lodger.
Yeah. Prosecco. I think Days of Wonder is a brilliant, brilliant book.
Oh,
well done,
you.
Man.
Oh, thanks very much. I didn't fuck it up.
You did not. Keith Stewart, he didn't fuck it up. We'll put that on your tombstone. Yeah. Don't forget, we're coming to your funeral. Do you remember? We talked about
yes. Yes. Oh, yeah, you're going to burst in at the back dressed as Mario and Luigi. Yeah. I've had this actually written in now to it's with my solicitor.
We're going to put a blue plaque on Ellie's house too. Keith Stewart once stadium for free.
Not just the once.
No, not just the once.
And we should maybe do a shout out to the amazing Morag, your wife, as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, she, let's be honest, she basically wrote it, didn't she?
Yeah, she
like
did.
Like Frederick Forsyth.
Yeah, she's the girl.
Morag is Keith's amazing wife, who we absolutely adore.
Yeah, she's brilliant. Yeah, yeah. I mean, she had to put up with a lot during this book because it was very difficult. It was really difficult to write it.
Was it harder than the first one? Then?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really hard. It was really. I mean, it took me 18 months, and I had to have a break about 3 months.
Are you saying break or breakdown?
Breakdown. Yeah, I had a scheduled breakdown, okay, which good. I took full advantage of.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was really difficult. Yeah, because it's a big subject.
Yeah.
You know, I'm. Yeah, it was really hard, and I obviously couldn't have done it without her.
But not Morag.
Yeah, but she comes up with amazing ideas as well, and she has a brilliant perspective on it. And obviously, because I was writing it from half of it from a woman's perspective, and a lot of the reasons why, if it does work, it's because of her saying no, that would never happen, or try and add that, or do this. So. Yeah.
Yeah. Were you before she read the women's bits, was it all like, oh, woke up today, think I'm menstruating.
Yes.
Went to the chemist to buy a Tampax. Then I had a lot of chocolate and watched These Women, and now I feel great. Is it like that?
So you read the draft, the early draft, did you?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Right, book chat done, Ellie.
Yes. Now, I believe you've got a game for us, Thorne.
Yes. Because we've been talking about games and feminism and women, I thought we should do like...
Risky things.
All those things. I thought we should do a feminist retake of famous video games.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, Games of Wonder, not Days of Wonder.
Oh,
so, what
yeah.
I've done...
Wow, you're getting everything. It's incredible.
She's put a lot of fucking
He's out. So patronising, but so nice at the same time.
Welcome to Games Journalism.
Yeah. This is our lives.
This is like everyone we know that we like is like this.
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
So you thought it was just me?
No, and Steve like Hill. Right. Oh, Jesus Christ, help me. Anyway, so what I've done is I've written down the names of famous games, and then basically I've got a bowl of lady parts. In the other bowl.
So you're see one of the parts.
Oh, no, yeah. Shush now. Don't spoil it for the listener. So, should I do like an example?
Yes.
Just to kind of kick it off.
So you've got two bowls.
Would you play this game? That's the idea.
Right, okay, so,
does he have a choice?
No. So this is, okay, ready? Donkey Kong Minge. Would you play Donkey Kong Minge?
I would really question what Nintendo were thinking. But I would probably play it. The next game I'm going to review for The Guardian is...
You need two lady parts.
It wouldn't be the first time. So the next game I'm going to review for The Guardian is Grand Theft Pussy Hairy Clam City. It's a controversial new take on the series.
I mean, Rockstar have always been edgy. They've really knocked it out of the park for this time.
Grand Theft Pussy. Yeah.
Who doesn't want to play that?
I mean, I'm sure there's a film called that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. All right.
So topping the charts this week
is Legend of Bush, Ocarina of... Cunt.
Snappy. Shocking move from Nintendo here.
Yeah, really going for that old
trying to break out of their family demographic. Hey, I've heard you bought a new game for your kids. What is it?
It's actually a new MMO, Keith, which, as you know, is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
I'm aware of the genre.
It's actually called World of War Twat.
Really interested to know why you think that's suitable for your son.
I mean, he just likes elves and Fanny.
What child doesn't?
Right, Stuart. So,
I'm interviewing a top game developer at E3 next week, actually.
Shigeru Miyamoto, or...?
No, it's the creator of Final Vagina. I'm interviewing the developer of Final Vagina 4. Really, oh, it's a beautiful game.
It's much better than Final Vagina 3.
Yeah. There's a lot more interactivity with it.
What I do love about Nintendo is that they do, like to take their old franchises and reimagine them,
And
just bring something new, more contemporary. And that's what they're doing with Super Mario Gash.
Wow. What's gone wrong in Mushroom City this time?
Luigi's got herpes.
Oh, not again. So, yes, I'm going to BAFTA. Who are doing a retrospective on this top series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. This is an arcade classic. I used to play it in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Pack Foof.
Fuck. Foof.
So, you know Pac-Man. So they just thought, what else could we have that's an odd colour
that has a mouth.
An insatiable mouth.
Who's having the final dip, I think?
Shall I do the final dip? It's the final game. Okay, so... All right. So, Helen, this is a game that you used to play at university. Yes. One of your favourites from that era. And it was Street Kebab 2, The World Quim. Excellent fighting game. Oh. I mean, you should see the special moves.
Oh my god.
Amazing scenes.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
What a great game.
Yes. You're very welcome. Very highbrow.
Yes, I hope they do make it into a video game. That's the dream. Excellent. Now, shall we have some scummy mummy confessions before we wrap up? Do you want to kick us off?
I do. So mine actually came from my time in Australia. I encountered a racist, Illy. I mean, who knew?
Shocking.
What?
I know.
In Australia?
I know, right?
Can't believe it.
I was having my eyebrows done by the lovely Kendall. We were talking about, as a comedian, I used to dress up and wear a cat suit. She said, oh, I actually wore a cat suit the other day to a dress-up party. I went as a Spice Girl. And I said, which Spice Girl did you go as, Kendall? And she went, Scary Spice. And I was like, okay. Kendall was white, ladies and gentlemen listening. But Kendall told me that she put on 5 coats of fake tan. Went to the party, and then when she arrived, a Scary Spice, they went, Kendall, that's not a good idea, Kendall. And they're like, no. And then they were going to a bar afterwards.
You should have used 6 coats.
It's not realistic enough, Kenny. Kendall had to stay at home for a week. Yeah, just to let it blend off. Yeah, so that was my racist beautician story.
Wow, she sounds great.
Yeah, good on you, Kenny. Yeah, not such a great idea.
Did she see that she maybe made a faux pas?
Yeah, and I think also...
I say faux pas, been a massive fucking racist is what I meant to say.
Yeah, not just jokes, you know? Yeah. Like, yes. Sure. They make good choices there. They make really good choices.
Oh, that's excellent.
Anyone else got a scummy mummy confession about the racist beautician, maybe?
We've got a puppy, and I've never owned a dog before.
Oh.
And so,
a lot of shit maintenance.
Yes. Oh, yeah. My goodness, that's the thing. Because as a non-dog owner for years, I'd obviously complain about dog poo on the pavement everywhere. And so I took my dog out for a walk in town the other day, and I had all my poo bags on me. And, you know, we've even got a special little satchel for our poo bags.
Oh,
That's so frome. Yeah, I know, exactly. But my dog, unfortunately, did an incredibly squitzy soft poo right outside someone's house.
Oh.
And, you know, a soft poo on concrete, there's nothing you can do with a poo bag.
No. It's still going to leave a mark.
Yeah, there's going to be a skid mark. Mm. And it was right outside someone's house. And I just looked at it. I dabbed at it with my poo bag hand.
Oh,
and thought, this is massively ineffective.
Yeah.
And I just legged it.
Yes, sometimes it's the only way. We're not condoning it, but
no.
We feel your pain.
Exactly.
But as long as you look like you've made an effort, so your conscience is slightly.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was clear someone had their hands in it.
Yeah.
But it's not the. It's like that time when my son wet himself in the Apple store. And it's that you have that fight or flight, don't you?
Yeah, time to go.
What did you do?
I grabbed him and legged it.
Oh, you did
flight? That was just a pool of...
Because when it happened to me, I just punched everyone in the office door in the face.
Nothing to see here.
Yeah. Fight.
They all woke up several hours later with a pool of poo.
Oh, podcast done, Ellie.
Yes, I think so. So your book, Keith, Days of Wonder, is out now.
Yes, it's out now, and it's freely available. Well, not freely available, free, obviously. Also,
it is available in many forms. Yeah. On ebooks.
On ebooks.
On the ebooks.
On the old ebooks.
MySpace, Bebo.
Yeah, exactly. Get on Teletext.
Netscape Navigator.
Yahoo loves it.
Yeah, where can people follow you?
They can.
I mean, in Froome. Yeah. He's in Froome. Yeah. He lives in Froome.
I am on Twitter as Keith, K-E-E-F, Stewart, or Instagram as Keith.Stewart.
Do please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. We would love that. And come and see us live, Ellie. We're all over the country, aren't we?
Yes, we're all up. And now we're going to Cornwall, aren't we?
In July.
Are you going to make any pasty jokes?
We'll be all over the scones and pasties. But, we're doing the very la-di-da festival called Port Elliot. And we're also going to be in St Ives, which was lovely. But we're going to be in, like, Manchester and Bromsgrove and a bit of London as well. So we're all over the place.
Manchester and Bromsgrove.
Hello.
Oh, and Brighton on the 27th of June. We're doing still some tickets available for that.
Whitstable, Milton Keynes.
Yeah.
That's where I was born, in Milton Keynes.
That's why we're going there.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
We're going there.
Are you playing at the Keith Stewart Memorial?
we're doing a Keith Stewart pilgrimage.
Well, I think that's us, Thorn.
Yeah, all right then.
Until next time.
Bye-bye!
Oh, sorry, I didn't say thank you to Keith.
Thanks. Yeah. See, I'll just sit here
Jesus
waiting.
Christ.
What the hell? This is the last time I come on this shit show.
Fucking hell. Dropping the ball, Lily.
Keith, thanks for coming onto our massively successful platform to do some free advertising for your book.
Thank you for having me, associative partner in marketing.
You're welcome, business contact. Until next time.
Bye.
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 I'll get more Prosecco for this bit.
Hang on. I will read it, Keith. I'm really sorry.
No, don't worry.
I've read a little bit of it and I really like it. She's just fainted in the thing.
Oh, right.
I mean, I've really
read
a lot.
So you're chapter two.
Yes, exactly. But it was very realistic. You painted a beautiful picture with your words.
Oh, thank you.
How does one even open this?
Oh, it looks organic.
It's like Rubik's Prosecco.
I think you need a screw.
Oh, God.
But before then, let's open the bottle of wine.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer.
Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.